Welcome to Spark Your Fire Podcast, sparking your interest in Australian property and finance. Here's your hosts, Jazz and David.
G'day everyone, welcome back to another episode of Spark Your Fire. I'm your host, David Shee, and on an overcast Sydney day today, I've got my partner in crime, Jazz, on the Melbourne side, telling me that the Melbourne weather is, as always, better than Sydney. Is that true, Jazz?
Well, at this very point, I'm looking outside and I've checked the weather on Google. We have discussed it. You know it is better, and I'm being honest, right?
I don't think so. I'm gonna obviously check up on that too. But we can always have that competition about which city is better. But look, we can probably get our guest today to comment on that as well and share a bit of insight in terms of which city is better. And we've got Ben Paul, is it Paul, from BFP Property today, onto the show with us. Ben, welcome.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
Ben, I guess, so I know you're a investor, and how long have you been investing now?
So started when I was 18, so 15 years, so telling my age. So started at a relatively young age, haven't looked back and kind of haven't stopped either, yeah.
How did you stop? How did you start? Because that was a very, very early age, not many people actually started at that age.
Yeah, so I guess my background's always been in finance. Always had an interest in money and trying to make it. And I guess at that early age, I think property was probably the only asset class that I understood. I did dabble in shares when I was quite young, but unsuccessfully. So I always worked from a very young age, from 14, working in Woolworths stacking shelves. So had a bit of money. As soon as I was 18, I started looking and I partnered with my brother, who's a couple of years older, and we bought our first property, which was a little unit in the inner west of Sydney. I personally really got that bug and the interest, I think, just grew from there.
That's awesome. But what sparked your interest in property, though? Like, you said you dabbled in shares, but obviously there's other asset classes as well. Like, was it your family, your parents that had a bit of impact in terms of why you chose property as the asset class to go in?
Yeah, so no real, I guess, from a parent's perspective, no, they've never been, you know, big investors. They've always owned land, funnily enough, but never having an investment portfolio. I think it was more the security side of things of property. You can see it, you can feel it, you can touch it.
Same asset class.
Correct, yeah. Living in Sydney my whole life, you know, probably not the right way, but I went and bought in my own backyard because I could. You know, back then, I remember driving past it and
that's
always,
how
you know,
started.
Well, that's how you start without really the knowledge. But I think what drew me towards property was, you know, that the security and the safeness or the perceived safeness of property.
Yeah, good.
And I guess the opportunity to use leverage, so using a small deposit to get into the market, I think was also a draw card.
Yeah, the leverage is that's pretty powerful.
Ben, how big is the portfolio?
So now in terms of properties, it's five properties in the portfolio, and from a valuation perspective, it's just over that three million mark. The properties are spread from Brisbane down into Sydney, all the way down into Tasmania. So I'm exposed to three states at the moment, but eventually the plan is to, I guess, to continue to diversify across other states.
Yep.
And I've also got a strong interest in overseas markets, namely the UK market. I've been following for a long time, also from my stint when I lived in the UK. And it's quite fascinating, quite similar to the US market. But, it's one that I'd like to get into to eventually for a couple of reasons, mainly from a cash flow creation perspective. Some yields are there over there are quite astounding when you compare it to say what you can get here in Australia. But that's kind of what the portfolio looks like at the moment.
Well, now that you've touched on UK, let's just dig into that a little bit. So when you say yields, what kind of yields do you normally get there?
Oh, look, you can achieve yields in large cities. I guess I'd caveat that the UK market is extremely different to the Australian market. But you can achieve yields of 12-13% gross, 12-13% gross, So you can do the numbers. Your net yields are still relatively high.
That's commercial level.
Look, it's, yeah, the strategy over there for me would be the HMO strategy, which is similar to the building, the boarding house strategy, the here housing, in Australia, yeah. What people do. So that's where your yields can magnify. But there's also just the simple buy-to-let strategy over in the UK, which is quite compelling when you look at it from a yield perspective. Look, growth, I think, is it can be subsided. It can be a little lower than what you'd expect, say, in Australia. It's a much more mature market over there. Obviously, issues around Brexit and things in recent times have hindered growth. The rest of the UK is extremely different to, say, the London market, where it's obviously a blue-chip market and it's performed quite strongly over many, many years. But the broader market across the UK, it can be quite different. So you'd need to be getting some really good advice on where you'd be buying before you attack that market, that's for sure.
Yep. And what's the interest rate like for residential properties? If you're getting 12 to 13% yield on residential, what sort of interest rates bank charge for investors?
Less than what we pay here.
I heard much less, actually.
Yeah, so they're at close to 0% cash rate. The lending rates are quite low. So
very low.
So the opportunity for strong net yields is definitely there. But again, there's obviously a lot of quirks involved in before you enter that market. And me, as more of a professional investor, I'm still not convinced that it's the right strategy, but it's something that I would definitely continue to explore and potentially dabble in, eventually.
Super interesting. Actually, being an investor and also understanding some of the overseas markets like UK, I'm keen to see what your thoughts are with the interest rates that low in the UK market, and Australia is kind of headed in the similar direction, or it's already pretty low. 0.75 is the RBA rate. What do you see is the future like of the property? Do you still see it to be a strong performing asset class like it has been in the past, whatever, centuries? Or do you see it changing over time?
I still have my opinion is it's still going to be a very strong asset class. And, if you look back, if you strip back what the fundamentals are around property, they're still sound. The Australian economy, albeit a little sluggish at this current time, it's always going to continuously be a high-performing economy. If we look at, population growth, we are a very young country. We've got, 25 million people. That's not going to be the case for forever. So the population will continue to grow over the foreseeable future, whether that be, migration is still, obviously going to be a big factor in that growth. When we just strip back the fundamentals, property is always going to be needed. If you refer to it as a shelter for people to live in, rather than an investment, it's always going to be in high demand.
Yeah.
I'll caveat that where obviously location-wise you need to be careful, obviously, where you're buying. I'm still a big advocate for property, and I'll continue to, fly the property flag for the foreseeable future, unless I see something monumental, change to the fabric of the property industry.
Right, you just boosted my confidence. I'm buying 3 properties today. That's it.
Oh, well done. Go for
it. All right. On a serious note, let's dig into your portfolio a little bit. So you said 5 properties, 3 million, and they're spread in Brisbane, Sydney, and Tassie, right? Before we go to the actual individual properties, what's the debt ratio on the portfolio?
Or loan to value ratio? I'd say it's about probably about 60%.
60%, okay.
So there's a bit of equity, and a lot of that equity is tied into the family home, which is one of the 5, which is then what I use to continuously grow the portfolio. It's around that figure.
Do you ever think that family home is not such a great investment, or does it ever occur to you, or don't count it as an investment really?
My family home has been my best investment. So
right.
Coincidentally, it is in Sydney. There's mixed thoughts on whether the family home is an investment. I think anyone that bought in Sydney or owned property in Sydney over the last, say, property cycle, will always say that, yes, it is a great investment because everyone's done well. But long term, I and my family have a different mindset when it comes to the family home, which we may divest and then spread into other assets and then potentially go down the path of being a rentvestor, as the concept is. But for now, looking back on it, yeah, it's been a very good investment, but it doesn't always work that way, I guess, is what
of course. The point is.
Whereabouts?
It's in the hills of Sydney.
Okay, so yeah. In the hills, and that's the first property when you bought to live in.
That's the not necessarily, but that's the family home that I've got now. I have bought and sold and built quite a few times over this 15-year period. So, but as we stand now, there's five properties in the portfolio with the market value of just over $3 million. But for instance, that first property that I did buy 15 years ago, I don't hold anymore, unfortunately, because it's been quite a strong performer. But
has there been any reason why you sold it?
So at the time, I sold that one to build another home in Sydney, which again, that was in hindsight, it was a great strategy because we did quite well. We built it and then we unsold it.
Yep.
So we kind of just continuously, jumped up the property ladder when it came to the family home. So I guess, continuously upsizing to where we are now.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So that was to take the profit basically of the first property to be able to continue to build, isn't it?
Correct.
And you've actually done a lot of these strategies in the early days. You sold, bought, renovate, build, sold a few, and then take the profit, keep moving on.
Correct.
And at what point in time did you change the strategy? Because obviously you've got five properties now. You've changed from buy, renovate, sell to buy and hold to a degree.
Yeah.
What made you realize that, or what made you change your strategy?
Yeah, so it was probably up until about, 7 years ago where we then started to put together more of a buy and hold, I guess, portfolio. So we bought three properties up in Brizzy, and we bought down in Tasmania, which was probably the second best investment that we have made.
That's good.
So that's now forming the buy and hold portfolio. Three up in Brizzy and down at one in Tassie.
Yeah, right.
And obviously the Sydney home is what we've got now. So it was about 7 years ago that we did that.
But what changed? Like what changed? I guess was the question. Like, because you've been obviously was working for you in the start of the journey, right? You're able to take a profit from the last renovation or build and sold. So why not continue if it's a proven work strategy?
Yeah, a good point. I guess the thought process was, well, okay, we have been successful doing that. We've got the family home that we want and happy with. Mm-hmm. Let's now build a sort of a longer term portfolio.
Okay.
Yep. We've now got kids, so it's obviously the mindset has kind of changed. But now again, just going through a mindset change again, where we, your desires and your goals continuously evolve.
Yep.
So now that we've got that buy and hold portfolio, it's now looking at the next step. And I've always been an advocate for building that nice, robust, buy and hold portfolio, and then use that to leverage into, I guess, more advanced strategies, whether it be, infill development, subdivisions, et cetera, or some more cash generating assets, be it uniblocks, commercial properties. So that in the stage of my life at the moment, that's the next step for us. And and we're starting to dabble into those opportunities.
Yeah,
and look, there's a big end goal of what we're trying to achieve, and we're close to getting there, which is good.
What is that end goal, if you don't mind sharing?
Oh, look, it's time, it's freedom, it's all those fun things. To take a step back, I had a long career in finance. I was a CFO for some pretty large businesses here in Sydney and the UK. That lifestyle, I think, I got tired of that lifestyle of a pretty, high-end job in corporate. So obviously property was always at the back burner in terms of work the corporate life and build that portfolio, but the big trigger point was starting a family. Your thought process changes, and
when you got kids,
100%, yeah. So I was in a position to be able to move away from corporate life and move into something that I'm a little bit more passionate about, but also having that end goal of being able to have some really good freedom and freedom of time, freedom of choice. Yep. Later on in life, and the way things are working, it's not going to be so later in life. It's going to be a little sooner, but I think it's testament to, just taking action at a very young age and you know, whenever I talk to people about property, it's telling them don't overthink things. Don't make the property beast be more complicated than it is, because it isn't. It's getting that, you know, some good solid advice and some help and just taking action and chipping away. And I think you guys are probably resonate with that, but it's just doing it, right? It's going ahead and doing
it. Yeah, it's actually execution rather than just thinking about doing things. Is actually jumping in and taking that plunge, right?
Mm. And it's not to say that you won't make mistakes along the way. 100%. I think we probably all say that we've all made mistakes. And I'm sure there's a property, particularly in my portfolio, that I'd say, look, yeah, it mightn't have been the best, but yeah, you learn from your mistakes. And properties, it's a very forgiving asset class, assuming that you bought relatively well at the beginning.
Oh, that's good. Just digging into the family home before we go into more detail about the other investment properties. How are you structured, Ben, on your family home in terms of, is it paid off, or have you got money sitting in the offset account so you can go and make the purchases when you find the right opportunity, or how are you financially structured on your family home?
Yeah, so there is still a bit of PPOR debt attached to the property, but then there's a large, cash sitting in an offset account, and then we've used the family home, the redraw facilities to buy
yep.
a couple of different investment properties. So,
So the three properties that you have got in Brisbane, do you mind sharing where they are in Brisbane?
Yeah, sure. So the first one is in the Western Corridor in Ipswich.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just a very simple 3322 brick and tile home on a 500 square meter block. Yeah, decent yield, right? It's got a close to a 6% gross yield. So
how much did you bought it for?
Close to 300 from memory, yeah.
And this is back in 5 years ago?
Yeah. Say it 5 years ago. Okay. So we bought it for 300 and it's probably worth 320 now. So from a valuation perspective, it hasn't grown that much. But has it cost us anything to hold? No.
Probably not.
Actually. Not really. Apart from the odd maintenance request, it hasn't. And it's funny, I ran numbers the other day of the entire portfolio of what it's actually cost me to hold over the last...
Mm.
say 10 odd years, and the numbers yep. are quite interesting, right? So that particular property, from a growth perspective, not so great. From a holding perspective, it's been not a drain on the cash flow, if that's what makes sense.
So do you mind letting us know what the rent yield is on that property?
It's it'd be just on 6%.
6%, that's good. What's the second one in Brisbane?
So number two and number three are very close to each other in Moreton Bay.
Nice.
One is at the top end of Moreton Bay, the other one is at lower end Moreton Bay. So so the first one being in Kalanga, talk names because there's nothing to hide.
That's all right.
So Kalanga property is it's not a really good location. It's a typical Queenslander, four bed, two bath, two garage. Again, quite a solid yield. It's had the same tenant, I think, for the last 15 years. So well before I bought the property, wow. It's had the same tenant. So effectively, I treat that tenant as if it's the owner, and I actually tell them. It's quite funny. we bought that for low 300s or mid 300s, 330 from memory. It's probably worth about 400 now, so we've done okay. And it's renting for 350 per week. It's a little under market value, but from a rent perspective. But my view is I'd rather have this tenant in there rather than getting someone else in. And they look after it as if it's their own. And practically, well, they've had it for more than I have. So.
Yeah, so roughly 5.5% yield on it, rent yield, yep. give or take. Yep. Uh-huh. And that's in Kalanga. So what is it, just a stock standard home, old house on a block of land or townhouse?
Yeah, correct,
what
yeah. is it? So it's had a very it's on a 600 square meter block. There's scope for a granny flat, but whether I execute that or not is another question. But it's a really good location, close to amenities, to the new university, which yep. is coming online soon. And the exciting thing about that one is actually fully renovated properties, very similar to mine, are selling. And I know because I'm I've been close to buying some at around that 450 mark. So,
yeah, right.
If I splash some cash onto that property, I can
easily generate some equity.
Yeah, I can manufacture some equity pretty quickly. Yeah. But it's just whether I have the resources or the need to really do that.
Have you thought of putting a granny flat? Because that will boost up the rent yield quite a lot. Obviously, there's a bit of cost involved. Did you do the numbers, or you haven't really bothered?
I'm in two minds with around granny flats. It's great for from a yield perspective play, but resale, it does impact it. And there's a lot of evidence that can suggest that a granny flat can impact your resale. Obviously, your market for selling that finished product is limited, and the equity that you can achieve through a granny flat strategy is not that great in that particular market. I've done quite a bit of analysis on that for some clients, and I don't see the need to do that. But and the capital that you put into a granny flat, you could pretty much put that capital into a new property. So a granny flat strategy can work in some markets, but I feel as though in this particular market, not so much at the moment.
Sure, right. And what's your long term plan on this property? I mean, are you just gonna sit on it and keep watching the growth happen, or you've got a price target in mind where you will actually end up selling it, kind of thing?
Yeah. Sitting here today, I plan to just keep it, and potentially do a cosmetic renovation in years to come. But have no plan to sell it, regardless of what it. Well, who knows if it doubles in price, you might change your thinking.
It might be a tease, right?
Yeah, but at the moment, no. I'll hold on to it because it's a good little property.
Yeah, no, that's good. What about the other one that's close to Kalinga?
So the other one that I've got up on the north side is in a suburb called Deception Bay.
Yep.
Which you may know. So it's literally a street away from the water. When I say water, it's not Bondi Beach. Deception Bay isn't somewhere that look at the moment. But there's a lot of plans. I've spent a lot of time in that area. There is some plans for what they hope to turn Deception Bay into. It's a real long-term play. It's got some zoning that I can develop into the future, and even more so if I acquire the neighbouring properties. Again, price point, it was mid 300s, I think 350 from memory. It'd be worth, probably like 390 potentially, renting for 350 a week, similar to the Kalinga property. But it's got some, I guess what we call, some X factor in terms of what I can do with it later on. Yeah. But it's a long-term play again. I'd need to see some infrastructure spending in the area and some, potentially a slight demographic change. But Deception Bay is quite an interesting market where you actually have homes in that suburb that sell for 500,000, 600,000. Mm-hmm. Obviously slightly different to what I bought, but it's a mixed market, and you do get that in parts of Moreton Bay where, one street you can have a row of older Queenslanders for sub 400, and then next door you've got the neighbouring streets you've got $500,000-$600,000 property. So look, I'm still a believer in the fundamentals for Deception Bay, but it's not for everyone. I guess in my portfolio it was fine to add it into the mix for some longer term development potential.
How big is the block of land on that one?
So it's 650.
650. Okay. Yeah.
So there's some opportunity to
So that's why if neighbor is also wanting to sell, if you acquired a neighbor block, that would make it a great development potential for a
lot of owners, isn't it? Yeah, no, for sure. And in the street, there's some developers that own large scale blocks and some DAs in place, so the area is starting to get some movement in terms of development. There is some large developments already finished in the area. It's a wait and see what happens to that little area.
It's good. It's a great opportunity moving forward. What brought you from Ipswich to Moreton Bay, though?
I kind of lost a little faith in Ipswich, and I think it was there's a big hype around, you know, what it can do, what its potential is.
I think it's been hyped back and then as Sydney's Parramatta equivalent, isn't it?
Yeah, look, it may happen, but I think it's a real long-term horizon. The demographics around Moreton Bay, I feel, was a little more, you know, it had some more capital growth factors that was, you know, that I could see that would, you know, push the prices up. And we're actually seeing some decent growth in some properties up in that market over the last 12, 18 months. But look, Ipswich, it can suit certain investors, but personally, I sort of steer away from that market now.
Yeah, right. The question that I had before was more on why you chose Moreton Bay, say, other parts of Brisbane, let's say, for example. Was it because of the new uni that was upcoming? Was it because of the new train line that was taking off from Petrie all the way to Deception Bay, obviously? Is it because of the infrastructure news that's been pumping towards that part of Moreton Bay? That's why I say, oh, okay, well, I probably should pick a property around there. Is that what led you to the area?
Part and parcel. So they're all nice things to look out for.
Yep.
In order to work out where to invest. But I tend to take, you know, one step, you know, beforehand. I take a step back and look at, you know, what's the dynamic between supply and demand. And that's when I'm looking for properties for clients, that's the number one, I guess, thing that I look at before I look at train lines and hospitals and things, because that really dictates what's going to happen in a particular market. Obviously, supply is to the detriment of capital growth, so we need to be, you know, be careful of that. So when I was looking in that area, there was, you know, very tight supply in those sort of pockets that I bought in. Demand was starting to rise, so a lot of investor interest.
Yeah, right.
But as a whole, still Moreton Bay, most of Moreton Bay is still a very owner-occupied centric region, as opposed to, say, some suburbs in Ipswich where it's heavily investor-focused. There's some of the other, you know, factors that I look for. But gotcha. But things like train lines and university precincts, they're all good infrastructure projects that that we like to see. But sometimes I think it's something that investors make the mistake on. It's just following regions that have those sort of cool infrastructure projects. But the reality is, you need to be in that area well before they've
basically
correct. Yeah. So
because otherwise, it's too late, right?
Look, yeah. Most instances, once all those pieces of infrastructure are in place, prices have already factored in those projects. But but needless to say, they're always good to see when you're investing in an area.
Yes.
Yeah, so you've got good portfolio in Brisbane and Brisbane market. There's always a talk about it moving. It's never does, but there's a talk about it. What are you expecting out of the Brisbane market over the next 2 to 3 years? I mean, have you got a number in mind, like 10, 15% that it will achieve, or?
I have no clue. Yeah, there's a lot of, I think it was a bit of hype late last year that the Brisbane market will grow 20%. How these numbers are arrived at, I have no clue. But look, yeah, that's one thing that I never look for. I'm not trying to project capital growth and
over the short term.
It's kind of it's a very hit and a miss. And if you look back on history, no one's ever got it right. I think there was a lot of market analysts that said that the Sydney market was going to, you know, collapse. And what did it do? It grew 20% or so last year. So I just look at, you know, strong fundamentals, strong economics behind particular regions, and that gives me the confidence. Whether it grows this year, next year, or in 5 years' time, I'm still confident that it will grow in the right direction. But how much? Well, that's anyone's guess. But the Brisbane market, I think last year it returned a pretty, as a whole, the Brisbane city as a whole, it only returned, you know, a couple of percent in terms of capital growth. But that's as a whole. If you start to pinpoint and look at suburbs or regions in isolation, growth was a lot higher, and I can tell you that from as fact, because you know, parts of Moreton Bay, we got some close to double digit growth. It's I think investors need to be careful when they're looking at data in such a broad kind of view. It's best to look at it in isolation, I think.
Suburb, rather than as a macro view.
Moving on to the Tassie property. What have we got in Tassie?
Second and best property.
Yeah, Tassie's been brilliant. So I was fortunate to ride the wave of, was it 2016 or 2017? The big price growth that Hobart, where the property is, experienced. So I bought a property for $350,000 in, call it, 2017. And 12 months later, it was worth $450,000.
Wow.
No work done.
It actually got flooded, which was there was a big deluge. I think it was a year after I bought it. It got flooded in the process.
Oh, really?
But anyway, that's so that market was quite interesting. Again, it was supply demand metrics. The supply in Hobart is inexistent. Vacancy rates are practically zero. It's quite an interesting dynamic for a market, and demand just. Yeah, it's spiked over that short period of time. Is it going to continue? Look, I think last year it still did quite well. This year it's forecast to do reasonably well again. But long term, look, is there the fundamentals that are going to support sustainable growth over the long term? Look, it's hard to say, but I'm still holding that property. Yields grew, pretty much parallel with price growth, which was great.
That's great.
So when we bought it for $350. It rented for $350. It's now valued at, say, $450, $460. We're renting it for $440. So yields grew relatively quickly as well. It's been a good buy. Really nice, solid brick home, four bedroom, again with a very long term tenant in it, which has been fantastic. That was, call it a bit of luck, but it got some equity growth very quickly.
What do you think were the main reasons for Tassie market to shoot up?
It's a tough one, right? It went sideways for a very, very, very long time. It had a slight population spike. I think there was a lot of people from the mainland moving down there for lifestyle reasons, affordability reasons, but nothing significant. It was just so demand just slowly, peaked, and supply is in existence. So, when demand increases only slightly and there's nothing to, there's no supply, you're just going to get, economics to tell you that you'll get price growth. But, I don't think anyone expected it to be so rapid.
Yeah, I guess baby boomers is the main reason, really. There was no massive infrastructure or job boom.
No.
The area, so it's really the baby boomers, I guess, retiring up there, living life peacefully.
Look, that's probably one of the reasons. I know there was a government change in and around that time that the spike happened, but hard to say that they had any impact on why it grew. But look, the Hobart, I guess, economy is slightly changing and pivoting to a more sophisticated economy, but long term it's still hard to say whether it's going to be a strong market.
Yeah.
For the reason you entered the Tassie market, I mean, it's a shift from Brisbane to Hobart. Was it again a supply demand that you've done your research at that time? That's why you entered the market.
Yeah, part and parcel with that, and then just diversification, wanting to expose myself to other markets. It's pretty much the two reasons.
Curious behind the thinking at that time, because a lot of people probably look at biggest capital cities such as Adelaide, for example, or even Perth, depending on what your budget is and what you're trying to achieve at that time. Why Tasmania at that time was curious, because I know I looked at Adelaide at one point in time during my journey, but I wasn't quite convinced. And certainly Tassie was also, like you said, it's probably the economy is improving, probably a bit more diverse now, but I'm still not confident as an investor to pull my trigger and say buy something there with confidence to say it will definitely grow. If I had to choose between Tassie and something in Brisbane, for example, I probably would still stick with Brisbane just because of my risk appetite as such.
So
you must have had a really good confidence at the time, and based on the data that you had, is that what led you to say, I'm confident that Tassie is going to do well because all these boxes have ticked, because you're a very numbers guy, I can tell. Purely driven by numbers, that's great. But was that the case? Was that basically all the boxes have ticked and therefore that's why you decided to enter the Tassie market?
Yeah, I guess it's an educated punt. It was I no way bought in at the bottom of the market, so and I tend not to like buying at the bottom because I want to start to see, you know, the rise in growth, and I got it, you know, obviously I bought in at the time that I still, you know, achieved good growth, and I know a lot of other people that bought earlier and magnified the gains even more, but my philosophy is and will remain, it's I let the numbers do the talking. The numbers are the number one, thing that I look at, and then I start to, you know, dive into fundamentals.
Yeah,
it's done well for me. Maybe not so much in Brizzy, but yeah, that's kind of my methodology.
It's good advice. So where to from here on your portfolio? What's the next step?
Yeah, so I'd like to start expanding into more cash flow generating assets,
okay,
whether they be commercial properties, buying, you know, whole unit blocks, not in Sydney, obviously, but, you know, the sort of, you know, mid-tier cities or even regional centres, obviously needing to have strong economics behind those regional centres, but just something that's getting to, you know, to derive, you know, plenty of income.
Yeah.
And those assets, you know, assets do exist. Hard to find, but they do exist, and they can be a godsend for your portfolio. Look, growth, it can be to the detriment of growth, but you weigh up what are you trying to achieve and what's most important. And I guess to me, I think, you know, cash flow is crucial. Mm-hmm. It allows you to actually do stuff. Equity is great, but if you never actually use the equity for life and enjoyment, etc., well, why are we doing this, right? It's so that's kind of where my mindset is slightly, you know, shifting.
Yeah, right.
And then also, you know, potentially joint venturing with people to do some small infill developments.
And
things like that, which you know, doing some, you know, chunk deals as they call them, to generate some cash that way.
Because you've had a bit of experience before in the early days when you do the build, isn't it? So it'll be a waste of talent and experience if you don't use that on more of a bigger joint venture journey.
Yeah, absolutely. It's all about education, and you know, put my hand up to say that I don't know all the ins and outs of small infill developments, but I'd probably best, you know, as an insurance policy, just partner with someone that that knows it a little better than me. But that's also in the plans.
It's good.
Question around the, you know, how you were talking about the international market. If you were to branch out into the international market, how would you go about it in terms of financing the deals? Because I'm assuming based in Australia, trying to buy a property in the UK, banks won't lend you the money, right? So that means most of these deals, if you were to purchase international, will have to be cash settled?
No, they actually will. So in the UK, they will. So there's a strategy of how you go about it. You invest through like a company structure. So rules in the UK from a lending perspective allow you. Well, banks will lend to a corporate entity a lot easier than to an individual. But obviously, for that first investment, you'll need to, you know, stump up a deposit. But we're talking probably it'd be less than 100,000 Aussie when you translate it back to pounds. So the idea is to forego 100 grand to start the process, but then if you buy the right properties with the right sort of, you know, cash flow, you can then just quite quickly grow, you know, a cash flow generating portfolio in the UK. And I know people that have done it and done it quite successfully. But again, it's more a cash flow vehicle as opposed to an equity growth vehicle. But lending, it is doable.
Right. And what kind of growth do you see in the markets over there? Is it similar to Australia or nowhere near?
No, it wouldn't be. It's not similar. It's very slow, sustainable growth. But I personally, where I'm looking at eventually, it's cash flow. And that's the number one driving force of why I would set up a portfolio there. And it's, again, it's stumping up that first initial, say, $100,000 Aussie to park over there, and then over time you can just build a, you know, you can grow a portfolio of multiple properties. So using the income to then, you know, grow your serviceability, et cetera, all in a corporate entity. Yeah.
Okay. Yep. Oh, that's good. What are some of the key tips, if you were to give three tips to people who are starting out their investment journey or are on their first or second property, still learning, what are the three tips that you'll give to the investors based on your experience?
Yeah, it's getting your hands dirty and taking a real interest in what you're trying to achieve. So it's reading a lot of books and listening to good podcasts like this one as well. You know, it's where you can get knowledge and get exposure to people that that have been there and done that and can offer some good advice. Not necessarily just, it's always good to to rely on professionals to help you out, but you've got to take some initiative yourself and take an interest in what you're trying to do. So really getting your hands dirty and researching the markets yourself. Obviously, then when you get to the point where you've sort of educated yourself to a certain degree, you can always rely on professionals. But do that research. Build a team around you. Your mortgage brokers, your accountants, your buyer's agents. Get a team together that you can leverage off. There's a lot of people that have made a lot of money in property. There's no need to recreate the wheel. There's opportunities for people to leverage off experience and take action, right? Just do it. It's easier said than done, but there's a lot of people that procrastinate and just paralyzed by overthinking and then there's I see people every day on certain forums that you can just see in the way they write that they're suffering from overthinking and it's but anyway, that's
analysis paralysis.
And property is all about delayed gratification. Don't think that you're going to make a fortune the first year, the second year. It's a long term game and treat it that way. So you're the fun times will come, but you need to do the hard work at the beginning of the process, and don't expect your life to miraculously change immediately, because it's not. And there's a lot of people out there that think property will change your life very quickly. Look, it's not so easy. It's a process that you need to go through.
All right. Moving away from property, Ben. Aliens, believe it or not.
Aliens.
Yep.
Well,
property is boring. Let's move on to cool stuff.
Yeah. Well, my 3-year-old, I think, is adamant that she sees them most evenings. So I must say, I do believe in them.
Taken.
I thought you were going to say your 3-year-old is an alien. Honestly, I
am. Well, sometimes. Yeah.
Right. So you're a believer, and why do you think that they exist?
Because she tells me. She sees them.
She probably sees you in the dark.
Yeah.
do you think we'll be able to find them in our lifetime?
Oh,
in our life.
Like, when you think of are we the only people on this planet, and probably not in this solar system, right? I'm sure there's others around there. Whether we have the technology to find them, well, who knows? It'd be interesting if in our lifetime we did come across them. It'd be pretty cool.
And if we did, do you think they'll be smarter than us, or we are the smarter ones?
No one could be smarter than us.
I like that answer. How long before do we see majority cars on the roads being self-driving?
Well, that's a good question. It's probably going to be sooner rather than later, because I think, I remember when we lived over in the UK, there was already driverless trucks in Germany.
All right.
I don't know if they're still on the road, whether they were just prototypes testing, but... Well, I think it'll be sooner than we think.
What, 5 years, 10 years?
Well, let's say 10 years.
Majority being the driverless.
10. Ask me in 10 years' time if I was right.
Yeah, no, I kind of agree on that. Yep, 2030, right. And AI, do you think AI will take over humanity?
Oh, there's always going to be need for us to have some sort of input, but it's
or we'll be slaves to, or we'll be slaves.
Well, potentially, yeah, yeah, we'll be working for the AI monsters, yeah.
And that will happen in our lifetime.
Well, I hope not, but the way things are going, and it could happen.
there's likelihood of that happening. No, that's good, Mir. It was good to have you on the show discussing your journey. You got a good portfolio and hope it keeps growing and you keep achieving your dreams of building a sustainable, long-term, high-yielding portfolio across multiple countries and maybe on different planets if we find the life. Multiverse.
Yeah, no, thank you.
David, anything else or we'll wrap it up?
No, that's pretty much it. But yeah, thanks for coming on, Ben. It's really good to pick your wisdom. Obviously, coming from someone who's got 15 years of experience and be able to tell that property is not a short-term thing is definitely very convincing.
Yeah, no, appreciate it. Thanks for having me on, guys. Appreciate it.
Appreciate it. To our listeners, hope you guys are enjoying the content. And if you are, please don't forget to give us a 5-star rating on whatever app you're using and let the word spread like a fire. Spark your fire. Cheers, and David. Bye.
Bye.
If you have any questions or feedback about today's episode, you can reach out to us through sparkyourfirepodcast@gmail.com. That's sparkyourfirepodcast, all one word, @gmail.com. Also, the content discussed in this episode is general in nature. Please seek specific advice from qualified professionals in regards to your personal situation.